This is the eHealth Radio Network, your source for health advice on demand. And now your host, Eric Michaels.
This is Eric Michaels, and once again, you have tuned into the eHealth Radio Network and the Dating and Relationship Advice Channel. Make sure you connect with us on Facebook to receive the latest programming for your convenience, simply at eHealth Radio. Today, we are once again visiting with Natalie Robinson Garfield, who has been a practicing psychotherapist in Manhattan and Long Island for over 30 years, specializing in parent-child education. She works with individuals, couples, families, and institutions as a consultant and is also an author. Natalie, certainly a privilege to have you back here on eHealth Radio.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
Thank you. Now, how can we impact people or relationships such as a marriage, a parent-child relationship, friends, family, business contacts, strangers that we are currently in or are near in a positive manner?
I think that the best way is to tell you that there's a woman in New York City who had a birthday party a couple of days ago. It's her 114th birthday. And she's still, I wouldn't say kicking, but she's still very with it. And she was asked, of course, what's the secret to your old age? And she said, and the people who are close to her said, she is nice to everyone. She lives by the golden rule. And I couldn't agree more. Do unto others as you would have others do unto you. That's a great way to be nice. More specifically, each person has a hierarchy, a scale of how they take in the world through their senses. The acronym is KATOV, K-A-T-O-V. K is kinesthetic, movement in space. Are you a person who is sort of characterized by ants in your pants, moving ahead? Everything that has to do with action, then you may be a high kinesthetic. The person or people that you want to have a more positive relationship may or may not be kinesthetic. The way to make a more positive relationship is to cater to their sense mode. It's very easy to figure out. You go on my website, you can take the test. It's a kind of silly little test, but it gets you thinking about what is my priority sense and what is the other person's or people's. Now, the real basic position of this is not even whether you know for sure or you are just guessing. But most people, most of the time, live in a kind of self-absorbed bubble, assuming that the other person that they're dealing with is in the same place at the same time they are. That's not true. And so simply by holding the question, I wonder what's their prevalent sense mode. I think I know mine. Maybe I do, maybe I don't. You're out of the bubble. And immediately people feel better. Better about themselves, better about the relationship. Because research, fairly recent research, has shown that the most basic need of humans is to be known. We used to think it was to be loved. Before that, we thought it was to be touched. But now we know it's to be known. And that's a way for someone to feel known. So it's very powerful. Let me just run down the five senses. We've talked a little about kinesthetic. A is auditory. People who take in the world through sound. They are very sensitive to sound. They tend to be talkers themselves. They like music. All sound kinds of things. T is tactile. Tactile means touch. Touch on the skin, meaning how clothes feel on you, the couch you're sitting on, but it also means inner feelings, how you feel emotionally. Tactile people tend to be sensitive. Kids especially show it where they squirm around. They don't want to put those socks on because the threads are loose. Everything itches them. They usually don't even want to wear clothes when they're really young. They like to go naked. Emotional people tend to be tactile. O is olfactory taste, that's smell and taste. You can tell an olfactory person because they hold their nose kind of pinched, especially ones who live in the city, because the city tends to not be a pleasant-smelling place. They're very preoccupied with food. I have a colleague, when she wakes up in the morning, she says to herself or who's ever there, gee, what will I have for dinner? I myself am very low in olfactory. I wouldn't dream about thinking about a meal. I mean, I do if I'm on my way to a good restaurant, but certainly not first thing in the morning. And finally, V is visual. Visual people are pretty easy to tell also, excuse me, in that they care about their appearance. How they look is important to them. So their clothes match, their home has a particularly nice visual. It may not be my taste, but it's their taste. And how things look is very important. Another way to sort of tell what people are is the language that they use. So a kinesthetic person says, you know, I bumped into Jane yesterday, and she is on the go. An auditory person says, I met Jane yesterday, and she sounds awful. Sounds. A tactile person might say, I met Jane yesterday, and she doesn't feel well, and she seems very fragile. An olfactory person might say, I met Jane yesterday, and she told me the story of her relationship, and I smell a rat. And a visual person might say, I saw Jane yesterday, she looks awful. So there are different ways to tell what people are. Again, guess. Hold the question and guess. Any way that you can cater through language, through activity, through actual touching a tactile person will make that person feel known and will make the relationship more positive.
So how would you cater to these senses briefly, without getting into a lot of detail? I mean, that would be the curiosity. Let's say that I'm more audio and the person I'm married to is more visual. I mean, how would that work in that comparison?
Okay, how that would work is that you would say, you know, we have a couple of hours on Saturday. Let's go look at some paintings at the museum. Even if you don't get there, she will feel known. It's like a glow comes inside of her. She may not be aware of it. If I was there and I said, oh, you look happy, why? She might not even know, but it's there. And she will be more likely to say, the next week, I heard there's a good concert. Let's go listen to it. She may be more likely to cater to you. Okay, so another way, is that's an activity. Another way is it's time to redo something in your house. And she says, will you go with me to pick out the fabric for the couch? And you couldn't care less. You're auditory. You don't care what it looks like. You care what your stereo system is like. And you kind of balk. It's okay not to go, but if you say to her, you have such great taste and you always find beautiful things, that's commenting on her visual acuity.
Yes.
If you just say, once in a while, that color looks beautiful on you. You look so pretty in that sweater. Hopefully nobody's wearing a sweater today if they're in New York. It's 100 degrees, but you get my point?
I get your point. I like those illustrations. Now, I'm sure you also noticed how social media and technology has played an impact on relationships. What is the good, the bad, and the ugly with all this?
I think the good is that there's a positive to instant information. The bad of that is that it's often wrong and often sort of gossip mongering, even on the highest international level. The ugly of it is that I just had a new patient come to me that her brother posted something political on Facebook, their Facebook friends. She argued it. He was furious, but he didn't say anything. All he did was end the friendship, the Facebook friendship. And now her niece is not speaking to her. This question came to me, by the way, on SavvyAuntie.com, where I'm Dear Savvy Auntie. I answer the questions. That's ugly. That's not just bad. It's ugly. So there are a lot of friend kinds of things going on, friend requests, especially after reunions, high school reunions, college reunions, and that can be threatening to a marriage. So some woman sees you at a reunion and wants to friend you, and your wife sees your Facebook page and says, who's this? And the woman is being friendly, not hitting on you, being friendly, but your wife is disturbed by that. So I think that in terms of celebrity and social media, it's gone haywire. I'm sure that you hear, even if you're not a pop culture follower, you hear all of these crazy, outrageous things that celebrities tweet or put on Facebook, and that's not okay. It really is detrimental to our society. I have a very personal example. My niece, when she was 10 and a half, was trying on a bikini and took a picture of herself and sent it to her friends on Instagram. And my son saw this. Not my niece. Did I say my niece? I meant my granddaughter. He saw it, and he said, what is this? And she told him she just got a new bikini. She wanted her friends to see it. He went apoplectic inside. Not at her, but inside. You may never take a picture of yourself in a bathing suit and post it. That's the potential for really ugly. Because pedophiles spend most of their time just scouring all of this different social media looking for victims. So although she was completely innocent, it wasn't as if she was being seductive the way some older girls are, in terms of posting naked or half-naked pictures of themselves to send to boys. And we've had examples of this in the press, where a girl will send a picture to a friend, a boy who's a friend, and he sends it to other boys, and it goes viral. And all of a sudden, thousands, hundreds of thousands, sometimes millions of people are able to see it. That's ugly. So the benefits are there in terms of instant communication, in terms of international communication. We now can be in contact with anyone who has the technology anywhere in the world in a few seconds. That's very exciting, and it can be used for good. It's being used in the medical field in a very positive way, but it also can be abused.
That is so true. Now, looking at, we're talking about married and married couples and the dangers of social media. But as a married couple, what are some ways that we can keep the intimate sensation between the two without bringing the physical or sexual scenario into the equation? We kind of hit on that a little earlier with the scenarios, but if you could just touch on that, that would be great.
I think that refers back to your first question, because feeling known and catering to the other person are intimacies in and of themselves. And that can be done even in writing, because there are more and more in our day and age long-distance relationships. Professors who get a good position, one in New Mexico and another in Virginia, which is a patient of mine, and they still maintain an intimacy. So it's not even physical in the sense of geographically physical, but they cater to each other's primary sense mode. That's a real way to do it. Another way is to use social media or technology in a bigger sense of There's FaceTime, there's Skype, where you can talk to the other person, where you can see them. Let's say we don't have that technology in certain couples. You can leave a note on the bathroom mirror for your wife that says, you're the fairest of them all. I mean, you can say whatever you want. You can say, I love you, I'm going to miss you today, whatever you want. But just a little note. Those are ways to keep intimacy. Another main point, which I think has been overlooked a lot for the past couple of decades, is private jokes. I remember when I was in high school, which was a long time ago, we used to have private jokes with friends, boyfriends, whatever it was, and we, in the group, we would number the joke. So we would say 48, and two people would get hysterical laughing, 48, remembering the joke that we had numbered 48. That's intimacy, and that can be developed in a couple. So what kind of thing made them laugh last week? It doesn't have to be huge. They can just refer to it. And that laughter is an intimacy between a couple.
That is very beautiful. Today we are with Natalie Robinson Garfield, who has been a practicing psychotherapist in Manhattan and Long Island for over 30 years, specializing in parent-child education here on eHealth Radio's Dating and Relationship Advice channel, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. Now, here's a twist to the conversation. Can we really be friends with our children, and would that not remove the authoritative factor?
I think that's a very big and important question, and I think each parent or parent couple need to define friendship. What is a friendship? Is a friendship a woman of 50 who dresses and behaves like her 15-year-old? That's not a friendship, and it's not healthy. It's not healthy for either of them, and it needs to be looked at. Is a friendship where a real friend definition is someone who cares about you, who accepts you for who you are, who supports you when you're down, and shares and celebrates with you when you're up. That definition of friendship, I think, fits perfectly for a parent-child relationship. Intrusion is a big factor, and social media has and technology has come into this. We hear a lot about helicopter parents. We're hearing more and more in my field about parents who can't tolerate their child going off to college, and so they buy a house or an apartment or a room in the child's college town. That's intrusive. College is a time when children need to be discovering what it's like to be on their own. And a parent holding their hand through it with local proximity, physical proximity, is very detrimental. And so what we are seeing is kids growing up who are now in their 20s who have not really grown up. They're like 14-year-olds, 13-year-olds. So I think the definition of friendship is important. I can say this, that when my two sons were young, I had a fantasy wish. I wished that when they were grown men, that I could sit with one of them, either one, or sometimes the fantasy would be both, in a restaurant, and that people would say, gee, I wonder what that relationship is. They talk, they have so much to talk about, they laugh together, they touch each other, you know, on the shoulder or pat each other on the back. I wonder what that relationship is. Well, that's a kind of friendship, and I do have that with both of my grown sons. I also think that the kind of friendship that we might be talking about is more what girlfriends have, less male friends have it between them, which is really telling what's going on in an emotional way, whether it's fear that the guy isn't going to call her for a second date, whether it's the upset that the guy she was seeing for a month has dumped her. any of those kind of emotional issues, yes, it's okay for the parent to hear it if, big if the child comes to them with it. If not, that's theirs to work out for themselves. It's part of growing up. The other part of that equation is that we are also tending, with the high divorce rate for people, mothers particularly, but sometimes fathers, to use their child as their confidant in the name of we're best friends. No. The TMI, too much information, has to be really paid attention to. Kids do not need, nor should they have for their own benefit, a parent who's talking about their romantic exploits or situations. So on that level, friendship, no. On other levels, friendship, yes.
Makes a lot of sense. Now, what is the explanation in conclusion of so many teens isolating themselves from their parents? What would you say would be the reason behind that?
Social media. That's a short answer. Social media is one part of it. Technology is the other part of it. There are endless, I mean, I don't even know the extent because I'm not that savvy in technology, of games that they can play. And for boys especially, teenage boys who are building their machismo in a healthy way, there are millions of games of aggression and competition. For girls, there are a million ways to connect with friends and romance, which is what teenage girls tend to be interested in, not to mention fashion. If you want to see fashion and you're 15, let's say, you could spend a full month doing nothing 24/7 but looking at your computer and seeing fashion. So I think that it's all about the technology. I also think that parents have abdicated in many situations, I won't say most, but many, the pleasure of family life. It used to be that families sat down and had dinner together most nights. It used to be that most evenings were spent in each other's company in one way or another. The kid doing homework, the mother knitting, I'm being very stereotypical, the father reading the newspaper. All of that together time has just completely gone by the wayside in terms of women working, men working two jobs. Again, I'm speaking stereotypically, but it holds. Nobody coming home until after dinner. Kids already ate. Parents grab a bite. It's not really dinner. There's no cooking atmosphere. And the kids are already in their room. Mom's tired. Dad's tired. They can't even make the effort to knock on the door and say, how was your day? I asked my sons when they were in their 20s, independently of each other, what was the best, this is the Mother's Day gift I want, I told them. What was the best thing I did as a mother, and what was the worst thing? Whatever comes to your mind right this minute. My older son said, the best thing was that you made us taste something twice every week or so, something unique, he said, and so I have a very extensive palate. My youngest son said that you were always in the kitchen. And I laughed and I said, well, I had three jobs and I wasn't always in the kitchen. He said, but that's how it felt. I came home from school and there was a pot of something and I could lift the lid, taste it, and add salt. I could open the fridge and there was leftovers from the night before. I could have four friends come over and 15 minutes before dinner say, can they stay for dinner? And you would say yes. That's not the picture that you have in today's families.
And this is so true, yeah.
I think it's sort of on both ends. And I do think that the effort needs to be made for all those parents who are listening right now. I think the effort needs to be made. My older son now has a 2.5-year-old. And that too, and they have instituted family dinners at least twice a week. He travels, so he's not always home. That little boy now sets the table. He insists that he does it. He was not told to do it. He gets the placemats, he gets the napkins, forks, etc. And when they sit down, he says, "Family dinner. Family dinner." With a big smile. Nobody ever said that to him. And there's a candle that sits in the dining room table. He insists that the candle be lit. Because for him, it has a lot of meaning that they all eat together. So it really runs so deep in our beings to sit down with our families. But if you don't do it for the first 10, 12 years, it's going to be hard to grab those teenagers and get them at the table. But lure them. Make it interesting.
Very good idea. Always good to have you come on the show. How about telling our listeners, if you would, where they can be in potential contact and also to get more information from your perspective?
Sure. They can go on my website, thesenseconnection.wordpress.com. My email address is there. The test is there, so you can just take the test right then and there. You don't have to buy the book if it doesn't appeal to you. You can also email me. I welcome emails because I have a big private practice, and I do accept emails from my patients and from anyone who's interested. So my email is N for Natalie, R for Robinson, G for Garfield, NRG Images, I M Mary A G E S, at NYC, that's for New York City, .rr.com.
Very good. We certainly appreciate your always coming on the show. We've been speaking with today, once again, Natalie Robinson Garfield, who has been a practicing psychotherapist in Manhattan and Long Island for over 30 years, specializing in parent-child education. She works with individuals, couples, families, and institutions as a consultant and is also an author. And the website of reference, once again, is thesenseconnection.wordpress.com. Natalie, thanks so much for joining us again here on eHealth Radio.
Thank you. It was my pleasure.
And ours always as well. And this has been Eric Michaels, and you've been listening to eHealth Radio and the Dating and Relationship Advice Channels, a part of the eHealth Radio Network. And we do thank you for listening. And until next time, enjoy.
Thanks for tuning in to the eHealth Radio Network. For more information or to subscribe to this podcast, visit eHealthRadioNetwork.com.